So Shlach, Pasha Shlach. In the Chumash, in the Art Scroll, it's page 798, 799, chapter 13 of Bamidbar.
Yeah.
So the translation of the word Shlach is to send, and this is the famous portion of the Meraglim of the spies. So when you look at the actual story, the beginning of the chapter, it says, V'yidabe Hashem Moshe Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Shalach lucha anashim, send for yourself. In the translation, send if you please. The reason why it says that, because shalach lucha, send lucha for yourself according to your own choice. If you so desire, he's speaking to Moshe, if you so desire to send the spies, send anashim, send men, v'yasuru esa Eretz Kanan, and they should explore Eretz Kanan, they should spy it out. Yisrael, I'm giving to the Jewish people, each one, a representative from each of the tribes should go, right? So it sounds like on the surface that Hashem is telling Moshe, you do this sending, you know, send out the spies. But that's on the surface. But again, because it says shalach lecha, send if you please, if you so desire, if that's what you want, then indeed send the spies, if you so desire, right? Clearly implying that it wasn't really sanctioned by Hashem. It really wasn't sanctioned by Hashem. And Rashi quotes the very famous Medrash, and he says, Shalach lecha ledaitecha, according to your own volition, Moshe, according to your own wishes, according to your own theory, your own assessment. Ani eini mitzava lecha, I'm not commanding you to send them. I'm not telling you to send them. Im tirtza shalach, if you so desire to send them. If you so desire, send them. Right? If you so desire, send them. Lefisha bo Yisrael v'amru neshalcha anashim lefaneinu, because the Jewish people did indeed come to Moshe and say to him, can we please send some spies? Can we send scouts, spies, to spy out the land before going into it? And he quotes this from the Pasuk in Devarim. Devarim is a recap of many of the stories in the other books of the Chumash. So this story is so to speak, repeated, and more details are given in Devarim about this story. So that's what it says over there, that they came to Moshe and they said, can we please send spies to the land of Israel? Like it says there, that you all came to me, you all came to me, asking me to send spies. Umoshe nimloch b'shchina, the Medrash says, that the Moshe then consulted with Hashem, with the Shechina, with the divine presence. And Omer, Hashem said to Moshe, ani amarti lehem shitova, why do you want to send spies? Why do you want to do a pilot mission? I told you the land is good. Eretz zoves cholav devash, that's a land flowing milk and honey. I mean, the amount of promises that Hashem had given to the Jewish people about how goodly the land is going to be. Why do you want to send spies? I told you already. It's a good land. Shenema ela esachem. Pasuk he quotes, I brought you out of the land of Egypt, only Mitzrayim, from the afflictions of Mitzrayim, to a great land. You don't need to send spies. You don't need to do a pilot mission. Chayehem, and I'm going to tell you, by your lives, sha'ani nosin lehem makam litos, but because if you go ahead and do this, I'm going to give you an opportunity to make a mistake. You know, I mean, if you're choosing to do this, if you are choosing to send these spies, then realize that you're going to have an opportunity to err, right? You're going to have an opportunity to err. B'divrei ha-meraglim, with regard to this story of the meraglim, the spies, leman lo yeshua, in order not to inherit it. Because if you choose to do this, the danger is lurking. Danger is lurking. Now, what's really fascinating is that Hashem does not prohibit it. You see, it's happening over here. Hashem is not saying asur, it's forbidden. There are plenty of things which are forbidden in the Torah. If they came to him and they said, "Listen, we want to go out for dinner. We want to have a steak, you know, a steak and cheese sandwich or something," right? Right? Is Hashem, what are you talking about? Like, it's forbidden. It's out and out forbidden. You can't go ahead and do violation. You can't do avodah zarah. You can't do sin. So if it was an absolute sin, then Hashem would never allow them to be sent. But he warns them, if you do, and that's why it says shlach lecha, send the Kodesh. If you, Moshe, if you assess and you decide between you and the people, you decide you want to do this, then go ahead and do it. I'm not sanctioning it. I'm not forbidding it, but I'm not sanctioning it either. And I'm warning you, you have to realize that if you send these spies and things don't go the right way, it could end up backfiring seriously. And we know the rest is history. It did backfire. What was the purpose of them sending? What was the purpose of sending the spies? It's very simple. The Ramban says this. It's very, very normal if an army is conquering a country, if you are embarking upon any project which is very, very complex and difficult to achieve, then it makes sense to send spies, to send a group of people to check out what the situation is beforehand. So Ramban says that was their motivation. Their motivation was it's the normal way of armies. He says that. He says, "Kederach kol ha'boyim lilachim ba'aretz." It's the way of any nation, country, which is coming to fight a war against the country, a foreign country. Shesholchem lifneim ha'nashim. They send scouts, spies ahead of time, a pilot mission to spy out l'das ha'drachim, to know the ways, how to get, what to do. But yitnu lahem eitz, and then to come back and to give advice to the army, to the people, be'ezir yilchemu tachila, which city they should conquer first. So it's logical. It's very, very logical. And Hashem is saying to them, but realize if you do this, if you do it, it's going to be fraught with danger because you may see things you won't like. You may see things you're not going to like. We have to also remember that the Jewish people at this point, you know, they've been living a life. I mean, it hasn't been that long. It's only been about a year, over like maybe 2 years. They've been living a life in Mitzrayim and then leaving Mitzrayim and then coming to this, to Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, and the revelation of the Torah. They've been living a life of absolute incredible miracles. Incredible miracles. They saw the plagues in Mitzrayim. And this, again, this has happened over just a short period of time, a few years, because they're now 3 days after leaving Mount Sinai. They were about a year. And it took them 50 days to get to Mount Sinai. So that's a year and, 3 months or something. And then, it's about 2 years, about a two-year period, about 2.5-year period. They've been like surrounded by miracles. They went from persecution, suffering, surrounded by miracles, miraculous phenomena, the 10 plagues, leaving Mitzrayim, all of the great miracles which happened then, going through the desert, the clouds of glory accompanying them, surrounding them, protecting them from the elements in the desert, and then coming to Mount Sinai and then hearing the revelation, hearing God speak, the 10 commandments. They were just so used to this miraculous experience. But they knew that going into the land of Israel, this was going to end. I mean, they knew that they all these miracles and the Anani HaKavod was only for up until they would come to Eretz Yisrael, and the manna as well. The manna, the daily manna, miraculous food from heaven, was that going to continue into Eretz Yisrael? Of course not. They knew. I mean, the mitzvahs were given about agriculture, about farming, and about tithing and all the different laws of life. They knew they had to engage in once they would go into the land of Israel. So they knew all these miracles were going to come to an end. They knew all these miracles. They knew they were coming out of a bubble, a spiritual bubble of miracles, to go into a land of material pursuit of a normal life like we experienced. They knew that was going to happen. Not that the miracles wouldn't continue happening sporadically, but not on the level they were experiencing then. So the whole concept sending scouts and spies to check out what exactly we're entering into, very, very logical, very, very logical. And the Ramban says that's why that was their motivation. But again, Hashem said to Moshe, realize there's danger involved. Why? Because you may see, you're going to see things you're not going to like. You are going to see, you know, people and fortresses and buildings and giants. All these different things. You're going to see normal life. You're going to see the normal things which are living in Canaan, which may frighten you. And realize that if you get frightened, you may end up getting discouraged, and then may discourage the rest of the Jewish people, and start rebelling against me. That's really what the message that Hashem was saying to Moshe. But if you want to so do it, shlach lecha, then do it. Go ahead and do it. So that's the backdrop. That's what's really happening over here. And then again, we know the rest of the story. So the question is, you know, what exactly, you know, what did happen? I mean, these The Medrash said, Rashi says that when the pasuk says shalach lucha anoshim, send men. Who are these men? So Rashi says anoshim is not just regular anoshim. Kol anoshim shem mikra, Rashi says, whenever the Torah uses the word anoshim, which is translated as man, is loshen chashivas. It's an expression of great importance. It's important. They are people of great stature. Vosa shokashem hoyo, and indeed, at that time when they were going, they were men of stature. They were people of stature. They were on a high level of trust in Hashem, and they were good, right? So what happened to them? I mean, you know, Yehoshua and Kalev were the only two that didn't succumb to the negative report of the land of Israel, but the others, they weren't low lives. They weren't, God forbid, simple people. They were great people. So what happened to them? What exactly did happen? Why did they lose their trust? Why did they lose their trust? So that's really one question. And also another question is this, it says that Hashem told Moshe, if you want to send them, then send them. But I'm not necessarily sanctioning this. When you look at the parallel account in Devarim, the pasuk says that Moshe said it was good in my eyes. When Moshe recounts the story in Devarim, where he's recapping the story, the pasuk says over there, and it was good in my eyes. I thought it was good. So why is it? Oh, just a quick reminder to turn your devices off. Okay. So why is it, you know, if Hashem is really alluding to Moshe that I'm not really sanctioning this and there's danger involved, why didn't Moshe express that to the spies and the Jewish people themselves? Why didn't he do that? That's one question. Another question as well is that really, you might imagine that Moshe would even just discourage the whole thing entirely, because after all, Hashem did say the land is tremendous. It's a tremendous land. What are you worried about? You shouldn't be concerned about anything. It's a good land. We've been promised a good land. Another very interesting question is this. I just said to you, I just quoted you the comment that when it says the word Anoshim, they were men of stature, men of importance. When they left, they were on a... And, but then later on, if you look further down to verse 26, this is when they came back. When they came back with the negative report of the land, it says "Vayelchu v'yavo al Moshe." They came and they went and they came to Moshe. So the wording is obvious. It's a redundant wording. They went and they came. What do you mean? They went and they came. They went and they came to Moshe. If they went, they came. If they came, they went. Why do you need two verbs? So Rashi says, quoting the Medrash as well, that they went and they came. They went and they came. Where is it? They went and they came. It says, what does it mean? Lahakish alichasa lebiyosim. It's to allude to a connection between their departure to their return. So they went and they came. So they went is an allusion to when they went to the land of Israel initially to spy it out, and they came is alluding to when they came back with the negative report, alluding to an equation between the two processes of going and coming back. Ma biyosun be'etzarah, for just as they came back with a bad counsel, with bad words to share with the Jewish people, with the negative report, so af halichasim be'etzarah, even their departure to go was also with a negative report, with a negative counsel. Their coming back was definitely bad. And the going out on the mission was also bad. We just said a second ago, they were great people. They were anoshim. They were considered, Rashi said this just a page ago. When they left, they were kasherim, Rashi says. They were kosher. They were elevated. They were men of importance and kosher and righteous, etc. So how can you say in the same breath that they just as they came back with Eitzarah, with bad, they also went out with bad as well. So there's a lot of questions. And the Ramban asks many questions as well. Just the whole thing is very, very difficult to even comprehend. The sin itself and how they could have succumbed and how they could have stumbled. Now, you know, one answer is what the Ramban further goes on to say. The Ramban does say that, yeah, the sin was, is that they, you know, this, and the sin was a failure of bitachon. So it's important to appreciate every portion has a particular theme. right? Every portion has a theme. So I think it's true to say that this portion definitely stands out, that this portion is the portion which teaches us the principles of bitachon and hishtadlus. Bitachon meaning trust and reliance on Hashem, and hishtadlus means making a material effort for things. So this is a ubiquitous principle throughout Judaism and throughout life as well, is balancing the right balance between how much hishtadlus, how much effort do we make in financial, physical, material efforts in our lives, and how much bitachon, how much do we let go and rely upon Hashem. That's the constant struggle that all human beings, anyone who believes in God, goes through, that constant struggle. How much do I pull back? How much do I make an effort? You know, the more effort you put into your pursuits, and the more you do yourself, then you run the danger of kochi va'otzim yodi also zachay lezeh, that my power, my brain power, my energies, and my skills, and all my that I do, that's what produced these results, and it's not Hashem. So the more you put your own efforts into it, then you know you're bordering upon forgetting God. You're bordering upon forgetting Hashem. You think it's all my skills. It's me who's doing it all. And if you don't do enough, and then you don't put enough effort into yourself, and then you say, well, I'm just going to rely upon Hashem, you're also guilty of that as well, because the truth is that's part of the curse of Adam Harishon, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Go back to that original story when they came out of the Garden of Eden and they ate for the tree of knowledge. So the curse was b'zeyas apecha tochal lechem, by the sweat of your brow, you have to now eat bread. It's a decree. You have to sweat. You have to work. You have to put out effort. You have to make hishtadlus to make a living. You have to make hishtadlus means effort. You have to make hishtadlus to see the results, to see results of your efforts. You've got to do that. It's a decree. It's not ideal, right? In Gan Eden, in Garden of Eden, you know, they were on this very, very lofty spiritual level, just eating of the bounty of Hashem directly. It's a curse. And because it's a curse, that's also, I mean, some people really do feel it as a curse. But there are many people who look at their livelihood and their work as a means to an end, and they enjoy it as well. And they feel very satisfied. They feel very empowered by the work they're putting into it. They got to realize it's a curse. It's a curse. Making a living is a curse. Again, for many people, it is a curse. But yeah. for others, it's not a curse. It's they feel good. It boosts their ego, makes them feel powerful in the world. But lamaisa, it's a curse. It's something which has to be done. It's something which has to be engaged in. But striking the right balance, how much effort and how much bitachon, striking the balance, very, very challenging. It's a very, very challenging balance. So says the Ramban, he says, Chotu, they made a mistake. They did make a mistake. Here they made a mistake. This was an ounce too much, maybe more than an ounce, but a bit too much effort that they were putting in. The project of sending a pilot trip to go and scout it out, to look around, how we're going to conquer, which city we're going to defeat first, which roads we're going to take first. A bit too much. I promised you, it's going to be good. It's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. Chatu ba'amru, they made a mistake by them saying, Neshalcha noshim, we're going to send people ahead. We're going to send these scouts ahead of time. Ba'avushim ro'es Yeshua Hashem. They'd already seen all the miracles, the salvations of Hashem up until this point on a constant basis. They should have just followed the onan. They should have followed the cloud. Moshe kibul mehem lemalas taivasim. But Moshe accepted from them to satisfy their wish, to satisfy their wish. Vayita beinai adavim. It says it was okay in my eyes. Shesavalti ra'asachem. He said, Ramban says, I tolerated their not so ideal design to do this. For Horesi la'asosan, I told them they could go ahead and do it. The Ramban goes on to say, because he thought maybe by, you know, it's, I noticed the art scroll mentioned this as well. If you look on page 799, although Moshe apparently approved the demand, he actually hoped that his agreement would dissuade the people from pressing their request. The sages offer a parable. Someone who wants to buy a donkey, but says that he must first test it. The seller enthusiastically agrees. May I take it to both mountains and valleys? Of course, he says. Seeing that the seller is so confident of his animal's prowess, the buyer decides he has nothing to fear and forgoes the test. He buys the donkey and is very satisfied. So to Moshe, Moshe thought that his willingness to let the people have their way would convince them that they had nothing to fear. He was mistaken. They wanted to hear about the lamb from their peers, so he sent the spies. But according to this understanding, the act of sending, it was moving more towards Hishtadlus than Bitachon. It was moving more, it was over the boundary. Too much Hishtadlus cost them very, very dearly. Too much Hishtadlus. That's how the Ramban and however commentators explain it as well. But I saw a very, very novel understanding of this, his name is Rabbi Shimon Schwab. So Rabbi Shimon Schwab was one of the great, great Rabbonim of America. I mean, he lived, I met him, he lived in the last few years of his life. He was actually living in Mansi with his grandson. And when I go to visit my brother, I would daven at that minyan and I would see him, get it, and wish him good Shabbos after the service were over. But he was one of the great, one of the really luminary Rabbonim, great Rabbonim of America. He was from Frankfurt originally. He was a Rav in Frankfurt on Main in Germany before the war, before the Holocaust. He escaped before the Holocaust. He came and he ended up becoming the rabbi in Washington Heights in New York. But he was one of the great Rabbonim of America. So his commentaries on the Chumash are very popular, and other writings as well. But he spoke perfect English. And I'm going to read to you something he said as well afterwards, after we do this. But his explanation of this parasha, this passage, is actually very novel. It's a very novel explanation to explain it a little bit differently to how the other commentators explain it, but teaching us a very, 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 again, a very, very important principle in the area of bitachon, right? Bitachon and Hishtadlus, it teaches a very important principle. So he says that when it comes to bitachon, when it comes to trusting in Hashem, relying on Hashem, he says, in the ideal, the frame of reliance on Hashem, there's actually two levels of reliance of Hashem. What he coins the expression, bitachon besosim he'ayin, closed eyes trust, and then trust of be'ena pekicha, open eyes trust. There's closed eyes trust and open eyes trust. What's the difference between the two of them? So closed eyes trust is where you just don't know what's in store. You don't know what's coming down the road. And you know you have to do something. And it's you know you have a responsibility to do something. And as I discuss this and think about this, I think about my own life, think about our own situations, and we can try to like superimpose these ideas into the different challenges we have in life, the different responsibilities we have in life, right? Because it really applies everywhere. It doesn't just apply to making a living. It applies to every mitzvah and every challenge and every responsibility which we know within our heart we have to embrace. There are a lot of responsibilities in our lives, especially when it comes to mitzvahs. We know they're responsible, but we are scared. Oftentimes we're scared about taking the plunge. We're scared about taking the next step. But it could be a mitzvah, it could be a job, it could be anything. But the barrier oftentimes is, I'm afraid, what's going to be? But maybe this person's going to be upset with me. Maybe this person, maybe this, maybe that. What's going to happen? But it's a responsibility. I've got to do this. I know this is my responsibility. There's no bones about it. I've got to do this. What's going to be? Maybe he's going to be upset. Maybe this is going to happen. Maybe that's going to happen. All of the fears we have, right? These are normal. We have fears. So there's closed eyes bitachon, where you don't even know what's going to happen. And having bitachon, you just, he says, it's beter b'Hashem eina choke klal achar chesidus. He doesn't investigate what's going to be. He knows he has to do it. He doesn't poke around and figure out and decide and see what's down the dike. He just does what he's commanded to do. He trusts that everything is going to be fine. Again, given the fact it's a responsibility, you go ahead and do it. And you'll see that everything Hashem does is for the good. It's going to be okay. And in this way, many very, very pure-hearted, very, very faithful people have traveled along this path. Hamoni b'nei Yisrael, b'choladuras, in many, all the different generations. It's a type of bitach which is demanded of all of us. Is even if you don't know what's going to happen, and even if you could conjecture and be fearful of. Don't worry about it. Just move on. Do what you have to do, and don't even investigate. But then there's also what's called open eyes bitachon. Open eyes bitachon is when you know what's going to happen. You actually do know, and you actually do know what's going to happen. You know what the person's going to say, or you know what the financial consequences are going to be, or you know what the medical or physical consequences, whatever it may be. You know. When you're doing a particular mitzvah or an obligation, it's not being done with this to me, with this blindness, with this blind faith. You know exactly what's going to happen. You can see it coming up. And you know what's going to happen. And you know that through this activity that you're engaging in right now, it's going to be not going to be so pleasant. It's not going to be, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be fraught with potential danger, the godishman, the sionas, and challenges, umastinim, and oppositions and adversaries who are seeking to down to take you away. But the person doesn't stop. It doesn't. He's not thwarted by it. He's not affected. I know exactly what's in store for me. I'm going to go ahead anyway. What a bitachon that is. That's a much higher madriga of bitachon, where you know what the person's going to say and what she's going to react and what they're going to do and this, that, and the other. And I'm doing the right thing and the right thing only because I have bitachon in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, because it's the right thing to do. It's going to work out. It's going to work out. Somehow it's going to work out. Hashem's going to help me. This gabbel is a sakana to overcome those dangers and those challenges. For gedola hiderach, this way of bitachon is a much greater manifestation of bitachon than the first way. Shabbatel mesug Hashem, because this second level of bitachon, tzorach lahag bekach bitkono, you have to actually fortify your bitachon above your worries and quiet them down. Because you know it's clear now. You know what's going to happen. So you have to activate bitachon, like superpower bitachon, to overcome these things. That's on the one hand. But of course, what's the danger? The danger is it could really knock you down. The danger is you could get knocked over. You know, knowing what's coming up, you knowing and exploring and knowing the details, knowing what's going to be happening and know all those challenges. On the one hand, yes, it could end up becoming an incredible display, an incredible manifestation of bitachon, that despite all of these challenges, you go forward, you forge forward, and you embark upon the responsibility regardless, and you do it anyway. What an incredible display of bitachon. But on the other hand, if you do find out too much, it's going to sabotage the whole project, because shederach zeh mesukenes, because it's much more dangerous. Shitachon shinutzach al yedei nisyonos, you may be defeated by the challenges over the worry and the trepidation of what's going to be. V'le'yiskaban, you won't overcome it. You won't overcome those challenges. So better to be blind, better to be naive sometimes. It's better to be naive sometimes. V'yovach, and you'll end up losing your bitachon altogether. V'me'omnam bitachon kazu. Now, even though this kind of bitachon, this higher level of bitachon, indeed, is matim. It's very, very synergetic for somebody who is on a high madrega. Hashem does not want us to do that. Hashem does not demand of us to try to lechatchila in the first place to engage in that kind of bitachon of what's called of open eyes bitachon. What he wants of us is the very least closed eyes bitachon, where you don't know and again it may be very dangerous to explore too much. Now he doesn't say this, but it's obvious that there's another open eyes bitachon where you don't have to do anything to find out what's going to happen. And there's three things. There's closed, here you're at the precipice of a project, a responsibility. You don't really know what's going to happen. You don't know. You haven't thought about it. You haven't explored it. So that's called closed eyes bitachon. But you do it anyway. You stress. It'll be okay. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Everything's going to be okay. Then there's open eyes bitachon where, Taki, you know. You already know. You didn't have to find out too much. Someone told you already. You now know what the adversaries are, what the challenges are, what the different setbacks are going to be. Well, that's it. You have no choice in the matter. There, you knew about it, but you have to still do it anyway, and you have to have bitachon anyway. The closed eyes bitachon, which he's talking about presently, is where you don't know, and no one's told you, but you could know. and you could find out, and you could explore, and you could investigate, and you could do research, and you could do, but you could do too much. And that's what he's talking about. That's the, that's a very, very dangerous to go too much, to do too much. So hence the Meraglim. That's how he explains the Meraglim. He says the Meraglim, the spies, were really doing this open eyes bitochen to really flex their muscles of bitochen, to display their higher level of bitochen, knowing exactly what's going to be, knowing exactly what's going to happen, but still have bitochen no matter what. And was they're going to go, they're going to go. Now, I said it earlier that, you know, they knew they were going into a land where they were going to have to exercise a high level of bitochen in the desert. Miracles surrounding them, just miracles. So, you know, the level of the bitochen that they had to display there was also was not in the face of real life challenges, even though they failed in different junctures there as well. But going to the land of Israel, if we were all here in the desert, if we were all the people of the desert, and we know we have to cross the river, and we're going into a whole different environment, a whole different world of regular living, you know, we all know we're going to have to really, you know, we're going to have to exercise our muscle of bitachon much more strongly, much more effectively. So you can imagine why it makes sense. Let's do it now. Let's do it now. Let's practice the art of bitachon by sending the spies. Let's get into the mode of a high level of bitachon. We'll send this. We'll find out exactly what's going to be like. And we're okay. We're immune because we're surrounded by the clouds of glory. We have Hashem with us. We're going to be able to withstand that test. But it's good for us to do because it will get us into the rhythm. It'll get us into the mode of we're transitioning from a miraculous environment to a natural environment. So let's start the process right now. Let's start now by exploring and finding out what that material physical world looks like, what those agricultural challenges and the military challenges are going to look like. Let's do it now. And we'll thereby display a much greater level of bitachon, an open-eyed bitachon, a higher madriga. It's a higher madriga. I'm going to move forward anyway, regardless. I'm going to move forward regardless. And that's what he says. He says that's why he explained, that's why they were anoshim. He uses this to explain that they were anoshim initially, righteous and pious initially, and they were righteous all along because there was a madrega bitachon that they were already at that point displaying. And they were showing that. They were showing that. They wanted to really flex that muscle of bitachon very strongly. When it says that they came back with the bad root, when they came back Medrash says, just as they came back with evil, they went with evil. It doesn't say evil. It says Eitzarah. Eitzarah means not such good counsel. Not a good idea, because indeed, as righteous as they were, it's not a good idea. You know, opening your eyes to the dangers is not going to be a good idea, because it could end up swaying completely. It could end up swaying you completely, and that's what happened. They succumbed. It was a very, very delicate balance. They succumbed. They saw that with the intention, according to Rishwav, the intention to really show their higher level of bitachon by knowing what the dangers are, but then it was too dangerous, and it sabotaged their bitachon completely, and they lost it completely. They came back, and that's why, and that's why Moshe said, "Okay, go. You know, it sounds like a good idea to me. I mean, I'm not telling you to do it, but if you really want to, you know, muster up a high level of bitachon by doing this, then go ahead and do it, right? But that's how he. So it's a different angle on it. But however you understand it, it's still the same general principle. It's about bitachon. The general theme of the whole parsha, this whole story, is about the balance, the very, very, very delicate balancing act of bitachon, trust in Hashem. And that's our goal. Our goal is to raise our bitachon, So this is Rav Schwab, what I just read from his commentary. So as I said, he was a rabbi in New York, and then he used to go to this camp called Camp Buddhist in Connecticut, and was a guest speaker there. So I just happened to find this morning. First of all, he spoke beautiful English, and his writings, Rav Schwab's writings, are in a series of books. And I just happened to find this morning, and this is what I'm going to read from, is actually his address to Camp Moody's in 1994, a few months before he passed away. And this, it says over here, this lesson, this class on Amun and Bitochen, was delivered by Rav Shimon Schwab in the summer of 1994, on the occasion of the 24th yahrzeit of his mother, as a zechus for his neshama, the shiur was given to the Talmidim and the staff of the Torah Institute of America in Mudus, Connecticut. The Torah Institute is a summer retreat for students becoming more familiar with their Yiddishkeit. This was the Rav's last public address before his passing away on Purim of the following year. It's interesting to note that in this address, the Rav discussed something that Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people prior to his own passing as well. So there's a long piece over here. I'm going to read parts of it, but it's his perspective on betochen, on emunah and betochen. And it, you know, again, he just knowing who he was, and I'll just read certain selections of it. It says, so he says it's an interesting point in parshas of Ve'eschanon in Devarim. So the pasuk says, "Ata hachilosa, you began, you have started to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand." That's what he said to Hashem. So you have started to show. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu is 120 years old. He's the great leader of the Jewish people. And he says to Hashem, "You have started to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand." So Schwab said, he said, with all the miracles which he'd experienced, what does he say? You've just started. This is just the start. You've just begun to show your servant his great hand. In other words, he's saying, I'm a beginner. I'm a beginner. We're all beginners. This is how he began speaking to the people, to giving the shir. He said, we're all beginners. He was 120 years old. He says that we're all beginners because wherever we are, we're always a beginner vis-a-vis the next step. But the point is, as an introduction, you know, we're always at the beginning of a journey, right? So that's a good attitude to that. But going back to the main idea of what this is about emunah and betochen, he says betochen. We have two words. Betochen means trust, and emunah means faith. And the two words are oftentimes conflated, interchanged with each other. But he says betochen is based upon emunah. The Chazon Ish and the Emunah B'Tochen, his work called On Emunah B'Tochen, says that the B'Tochen is applied Emunah, and Emunah is theoretical Emunah. So there's faith, and then there's applied faith, which is living with faith in your life, living with B'Tochen, living with faith in your life. See, the Emunah is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has Hashkocha Pratis, that there's divine providence, that Hashem is running the show, he's pulling the strings. What does Ani Maimin Ba'amuna Shlema mean? What does it mean, I believe, with one of the 13 principles of faith? It doesn't mean I believe. Amuna is much more than belief. The common expression is to say, I believe so. The English word believe does not mean anything in that respect. Amuna means I am totally convinced. Totally convinced. Then we have in davening, we have an expression in davening that we daven in the Shmoneh Esrei, L'chol Abotchem B'Shimcha Be'emes. Please Hashem, grant us our portion among those who trust you, Be'emes, in truth. What does it mean in truth? What does trusting Hashem in truth mean? Is it possible to believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu in falsehood? You're going to believe in Hashem in Sheker? Of course not. What does it mean? It means that I'm not scared. And this is what he's going to say again and again over here. I'm not scared. V'lo'ir, I'm not scared. If one has bitachon, he's not scared. The test of bitachon is if one is scared. That's the test of bitachon. Are you scared? If you're scared, you have no bitachon. And if you have no bitachon, it shows a lack of emunah. In other words, we don't feel that it's real with us. He says that nowadays, people don't do this anymore. But in my times, he said, people travel by Greyhound bus. So by Greyhound bus, I don't know this, there used to be a sign on the buses, relax and leave the driving to us. So the Rabbona Shalom says, the Almighty says to us, relax and leave the driving to me. Relax, it's not your world. Leave the driving to me. This is what we say in Adon Olam, Lo Ira Ra, I don't fear anything. Hashem is always with me. That's what it means when we say, Kol Abotchem Be'emes. This is what Bitochen Be'emes, true trust is the test of Bitochen is, are you afraid or not? That's a true test. I'm afraid. If you're afraid, we don't have Bitochen. If I'm not afraid, we have Bitochen. So this is just reading his words and then in connection with this. This is the lesson. This is the lesson of the parasha, right? Of the delicate balance of Emunah, of Bitochen, and Hishtadlus. And the mistake that the Meraglim made and the different ways you explain it is that it was a failure of Bitochen. I mean, they came back and then, you know, and that, I mean, there's another major component of the story, because once they stumbled into that mistake of lack of bitachon, then there was no, then everything broke out. Everything broke at that point, because then they started exaggerating. So that's what happened as well. Another component of the story is when they came back, it wasn't just, they didn't come back objectively describing the facts as they were, and then creating fear and desperation in the hearts of the Jewish people. They went ahead and started exaggerating, because once you're afraid, you start exaggerating, you start embellishing, exaggerating the level of the danger which is involved. Once you've lost that trust, right? You start saying too much, and then therefore they lost their brains, they lost their minds to be able to objectively and accurately and precisely and honestly describe really the reality of what it was. Right? Kalev and Yeshua didn't succumb to that. I mentioned at the beginning, right, that the end of the parasha is the parasha of the Tzitzis, right? So there's a very obvious connection between the two passages, because the word which is used with the meraglim of the spies is very first line on page 798 is Vayasuru as Eretz Canaan. They should go and explore, spy out the land. Yasuru is to spy out. That same word is used in the parasha of the Tzitzis. In the parasha of the Tzitzis, one of the lines in the parasha of the Tzitzis is Lo Sasuru Achari Levavachem Achari Nechem. Don't explore after your eyes. Don't explore after your ears, your eyes. Sorry, one second. Don't explore after your eyes and hearts. Right? Don't explore. Same word. So, not by accident. I'll read to you a commentary over here from the. From the Ot Scroll Sefer HaChinuch, he says the fact that you have the two words in common means there's a common theme. So the Sefer HaChinuch himself says in the prohibition against straying after your eyes and hearts, right? Straying after temptations, etc. The antidote to that is fill your mind with Torah. He says that the antidote to making sure that you don't stray and stray after things which are foreign, which are dangerous, which are tempting, is fill the mind with Torah. Fill the mind with Torah. The Torah ought to be the guiding light for all of one's emotions, physical impulses, and character traits during every moment of the day, right? That's the principle. So with that in mind, what's the connection between the word exploring, Lusasuro, with regard to Tzitzis, the parasha Tzitzis, the Meraglim? Because they explored, the warning is don't explore. We shouldn't explore. The incident of the Meraglim, the story of the spies pertains not only to matters of national import, but very much the life of an individual as well. They explored, they wandered, their eyes got distracted, they started seeing things, describing things. It says they wrongfully took for themselves the right to judge, express an opinion, and reach conclusions based upon their report. All matters that should have been left to Moshe, their leader. They explored too much. But this doesn't just pertain to matters of national import, but this principle applies to ourselves on an individual level as well. A person is comprised of numerous character traits, emotions, and physical impulses and needs. He possesses the five senses. These five senses are our spies. The five senses are our spies of sorts. They gather data and information from his environment and report back to him. All these features are necessary. They're effective and appropriate as they facilitate man's interaction with the world, but only as long as they function within the parameters assigned to them by the Creator. To this end, Hashem endowed man with a general and a strategist. We all have a general and the strategist in our midst. Each one of us, what is that? The intellect, which through sustained study of Torah and knowledge of its laws can discern the will of Hashem in any given circumstance. It can discern if what the physical senses perceives as good is also beneficial one's spirituality, and whether what the physical senses resist as bad is real or just a way of neglecting one's spiritual goals. If the eyes, the heart, and other human faculties serve under the guiding light of the Torah intellect, then they are invaluable in enriching one's life and enabling him to live a Torah existence. If, however, one allows them to stray from their defined purpose and begin exploring their own aspirations and desires and accepts their suggestions without bringing them under the scrutiny of his Torah-guided intellect, then he has not learned the lesson of the spies. This is perhaps the message that the Torah wished to convey by using the term Lo Sasuru, don't explore. Same word as with the spies. It's all about recognizing that while the heart and the eyes play a role in a person's journey in this world, they are merely operatives in the field, not ones to decide whether to proceed to the promised land or not. Very well said. Quote, this is taken from a sefer called Kometz HaMincha by Rav Chanoch Erentra. But that's the idea. So that was the mistake they made. That was the second error. The first error was the actual mission itself. The second error is once they stumbled into the lack of bitachon area, so then it snowballed after that to start exaggerating and not using the strategist and the guide and the leader, the general, which is Moshe Hashem. But that's the connection to us. You know, what are we doing with our spies? Are we allowing our spies under the watch and the control and the guard of our intellect imbued with Torah? Our intellect imbued with Torah or not? But so I don't normally emphasize two themes in the parasha because that's really two different themes. Mm. But the first theme is bitachon. We could take that phrase of Rabbi Schwab and run with that and relax and leave the driving to me, Hashem says.